Okay, so I'm going to talk to something quite related to the previous talk, which is lucky for me. I'm going to talk about the indirect interaction between species and how you can have different interpretations of that depending on sort of scale of observation. So when species co-occur, they can interact with each other directly. Is there a pointer?
No. Use the mouse.
Oh, the mouse. Okay. So they can interact with each other directly through competition, say for a shared resource, or they can interact with each other indirectly through shared enemies. And if the interaction is direct competition, if one or both of the species are resource limited, then that's a negative interaction, either for one or both of them. But if the interaction is indirect, then the effect of it on the two different species can be much more complicated and difficult to predict based on various attributes of the system. And I'm sort of categorizing these attributes as the scale of the interaction. Are you either the scale that it occurs on or the scale that you're looking at it on? The temporal scale, and mostly I mean by that, are you looking at it within generations or over generations? And then also the host range of the shared enemies. And in particular, I mean whether both of the potential hosts are equally suitable or whether they use one or the other more. So, for example, if you have a generalist enemy, and I'm going to be talking now just about parasitoids, then say locally, if you're just looking locally, then adding a second host to a system increases the density and may attract more of the generalist and basically cause higher parasitism for both species. And so this would be a negative thing for both species. But then if you look instead at two different species which share a region but don't necessarily co-occur, but the enemy occurs in both places, then there may be basically no effect of them both being in the region because the enemy its population size isn't affected by either of those species because it has so many other hosts. Okay, so that's just getting you in the mood. So I work with these general, both direct and indirect interactions in this group of butterflies and parasitoids in the Åland Islands in Finland. So here's Scandinavia, here's Finland, here's the Åland Islands, here's the Åland Islands again. It's an area of 50 by 70 kilometers, so this is what I mean by spatial scale. And in this, we've got these networks of meadows where these butterflies and their enemies either occur or don't occur, or occur at different rates. So in this basic setting, I'm going to talk today just about a really one small component of that and one simple experiment that I've done. So there's two butterfly species, Melitia cinctia and Melitia athalia. They're quite similar, and they overlap in what plants they use and where they are. And they've got a shared pupal parasitoid. So the question I'm asking is, how does the presence of Melitia athalia, the second butterfly, influence the population dynamics or persistence of Melitia cinctia due to this shared pupal parasitoid? So this pupal parasitoid is polyphagous, meaning it has a really large host range. And actually, I'm talking about these two species together. And if you're curious about that, ask me later why. But anyway, they have a very high host range, like Pteromyelus apem also parasitizes bee pupae. They're gregarious, meaning that moms that a bunch of individuals grow up inside of one pupal case. They're parasitoids of pupae. They lay eggs in pupae. And they're ectoparasitoids in that inside of this pupal case, there's all these guys hooked onto the developing pupa. here they are showing this cool communal hole that they, once they become adults, they make that little hole as a group and then come out. Okay, so this last summer we set up this experiment, which is just a really basic test for apparent competition. So we put host pupae out in plots at a relatively natural density, separately and together, replicated, and then looked at the parasitism of each of the pupae. We actually put them out, if you can see here, there's a larva. We put them as last instar larvae on potted plants so that they could pupate and give all the right signals that the pteromallids need to find the pupae. Set them out. Here's a picture of a plot. We had three different ways they were out. So one way was we just had this checkerboard of Athalia and Cynxia pupae, or we had the two halves of the checkerboard separated. So these three treatments are replicated 11 times. And the 11 replicates are spread over the Åland Islands so that they're in areas where there's different natural densities of the two butterflies. So for example, way down south here, there's only Melitzia Athalia naturally. We left them for 2 weeks, brought them in, put them in cups, and then waited to see what came out. So what came out? 300 of the pupae out of the 660 were basically eaten by something else and ended up empty by the end of the 2 weeks. Eaten by something else in the field. We got 189 butterflies, and we got 4,275 parasitoids. They're gregarious, so that's out of a bunch of pupae. So of the pupae that were not eaten by something else, 45% of them were parasitized. This is a totally normal rate of parasitism for this system. So how is that? Okay, sorry. So we're a little concerned with this 300 guys that got eaten by everything else, something else. Can that mess us up? So we've done a little analysis of that, and I'm not going to talk much about it except for that saying that looking at the pupae that got eaten by something else, there was no statistical relationship between the host species. The host species were eaten at the same rate. The different density plots were eaten at the same rate. So we don't see any particular pattern with that yet, but we're still working on that. So now just thinking just about the parasitism, there's various outcomes of this experiment. One potential outcome is that the differences in rate of parasitism are simply due to density. So it doesn't matter which species are out there. When they're in high density, they're parasitized a lot. When they're in low density, they're parasitized a little. This could actually potentially be the opposite. But anyway, only density versus only differences between species, that species one, say, is the preferred host or the easier to find host or whatever, and then species two. And so no matter where you put them, one is parasitized at a higher rate than the other. But of course, as is usual, we didn't find either of these patterns. What we found was that Melitzia Athalia is parasitized at a relatively high rate in both by itself and with the other one. And that Melitzia Cynxia at the low rate when it's by itself is parasitized, at an indistinguishable rate from Melitzia Athalia by itself, but it's parasitized at a much lower rate in combination with Melitzia Athalia. Okay, so Melitzia Athalia is parasitized at the same rate in both densities, and Cynxia reduces its rate of parasitism when Athalia is around. Why would that be? Well, one sort of silly, but potentially one explanation could be that for some reason Melitzia Cynxia is negatively density dependent parasitism, that for some reason having a high density makes the parasitoids behave in a way that they're unsuccessful parasitizing. A more likely explanation is that Melitzia Athalia is found more easily or is for some reason preferred and ends up with a higher rate of parasitism, and due to, say, handling time, doesn't end up finding very many of the Cynxia. Okay. So you end up with a reduction in parasitism of about 20% for Cinxia. And so the question is, so what? Well, these butterflies co-occur almost everywhere where they occur, they co-occur. And so that means that this reduction is happening almost everywhere. And for this butterfly, that actually matters a lot because population, because they live, the regional population persists because of very small local populations. So increasing the number of adults present just by a few has a large effect. So reducing parasitism by 20% adds a few more adult individuals, which makes populations much more likely to persist. So I would argue that this 20% change has a big effect regionally on the butterfly. And tune in next time for the story of a different parasitoid, which is a very narrow host range and is very mobile and probably has a much different effect. Well, we don't know, they're ectoparasitoids. But we don't know yet, but we do know that when you look at this, the size of the gregarious groups, they're the same on both. But we don't know other than that whether there's a difference. So that could explain the difference, but not, it couldn't really explain the difference between the high and the low densities. Yeah.
So it sounds like what you observed was a host preference at the local scale. So when the parasitoid is on a particular plant, encounters both species and prefers the Thalia species, it simply devotes its time to those and the
perhaps
others escape.
Perhaps,
but
yeah.
In a no choice environment, that doesn't operate and the attack
right.
rates are more similar.
Right.
Would that be at all like the population level response, because that would be driven by different things. In other words, you observe results that would be rather like what you would do in the laboratory. The fact that they were outdoors is almost irrelevant. Would you expect to see the same protection from parasitism in the natural populations when you gave the growth of the parasite population relative to the local mix of species a chance
yeah,
to operate.
Right. In this case, I think that this is like what's really happening. Because these parasitoids are generalists, parasitoid population size, I think, is not being affected by these particular butterflies. And therefore, so there's not a population level response of the parasitoids. And therefore, I think it would be like I see in here, in this case, but not generally.
Thank you,
Saskia.